You're tuned in to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We just heard earlier from University of Illinois President Tim Colleen. Now we'll check in with some other college presidents in Illinois to hear how their campuses are handling the COVID-19 pandemic. Bradley University is a private university in Peoria with roughly 5,500 undergraduate and graduate students. With us now is the president of Bradley University, Stephen Standiford. Hello, President Standiford. Welcome to The 21st.
Thank you. Delighted to be with you today.
And Knox College is a small liberal arts college in Galesburg, Illinois. There are about 1,200 students there. And also joining us is the president of Knox College, Teresa Amott. Hello, President Amott. Welcome to The 21st.
Thank you. I'm also delighted to be here.
And listeners, we also want to invite you into our conversation as ever. If you have questions for the presidents of Bradley University or Knox College, our lines are open. The number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Maybe you're a student or a parent of a student at one of these institutions, or maybe you just live in Peoria or Galesburg. The number again, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. Of course, you can always also tweet us at 21st Show. So earlier in the show, as I was mentioning, we heard from University of Illinois President Tim Colleen, and the U of I, of course, has a much talked about campus-wide testing program where it's testing students twice per week. I want to begin by asking each of you about, you know, what respective steps you are taking before and as students are coming to campus about the testing plan. And if you have a testing plan in place for your students and faculty, I guess, President Standiford, I'll begin with you.
Sure. Happy to share a little bit. We, like all schools, we did a lot of thinking about our space, about creating physical distancing, requiring masks and various activities. From our testing and tracing procedure, we're very fortunate that we have a wonderful partnership and collaboration with OSF Healthcare here in Peoria. And with them, and actually in consultation with our math department, we've had a fairly aggressive surveillance testing procedure where we sample anywhere from 250 to 300 students, faculty, and staff per week. In addition to our surveillance testing, we've also engaged in symptomatic testing. So if you feel like you have concerns and want to be tested, you can do that as well. And again, it's worked really well in large part because of this wonderful partnership we have with OSF and their ability to help us not only think through that process, but then also be our testing partner.
And President Amott, I want to ask you about the Knox Together plan. What is the plan for COVID-19 there? How much testing was and is being done?
Well, like Bradley, we also have partnered with institutions that have helped us. OSF as well is one of our partners, and we're very grateful for the help that they provided. We've also partnered with the Knox County Health Department. So our health services staff working with them developed over the summer a very complicated testing plan because our students come from all over the country and all over the world. We are a national liberal arts college, so the majority of our students actually are coming from places where the positivity rate is higher, the extent of community transmission much higher than here in Knox County. So when our students arrived, and we are later than most institutions, classes actually began yesterday, but students began coming in waves starting a few weeks ago. When they arrived, the very first thing they did was drive up and get tested. And then they went directly to their residence halls with one person to help them. And they had 1 hour to move in. And then they essentially locked down until they received the first of two test results. They had to test negative twice. The whole campus will have completed that testing regimen on September 21st. And until then, classes have been remote. So we have made what I would consider to be very responsible efforts to make sure that we are not bringing COVID-19 to our small community here in Galesburg. It has required of our students a degree of patience and responsibility that thus far they have, we're not surprised, but they have lived up to that. And they took a pledge to obey all of these various strictures and controls that I'm sure Bradley also has put into place. But we have benefited from other institutions who are ahead of us, and we've learned from them. So we've also, in a sense, had partners outside Galesburg who have helped us figure out what's the best way to do this.
And as I mentioned earlier, listeners, if you want to join our conversation, the phone line is open. It's 800-222-9455. And I want to go now to Kathy in Pontiac. I understand you're a Knox graduate. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you. Yes, class of 71. And Teresa, I know you guys have been working hard. I was on the call earlier this summer. I just want to say, especially for small schools, how much the experience of being at a small school is not just the education part. It is the social and the growing up and all the activities, and I understand that. And I'm hoping there's ways and wondering what you're doing to find ways for kids to interact beyond classrooms in a safe way, and if you've had any luck getting that going.
That's a great question, Kathy. Thank you for the call. And President Amott, I'll ask you. Yeah, same. I mean, what and this is something I spoke about earlier with President Colleen. I think that, you know, some college administrators maybe overestimated the degree to which students would comply with stay in dorm, go to class, go back to dorm, and sort of just repeat that loop over and over again. What other opportunities are there for students?
Right. And as Kathy noted, and hello, shout out to you, class of 71. It's no question but that these residential liberal arts colleges rely very heavily on the out-of-classroom learning. And in our case, because people are coming from all around the world and all around the country, a lot of that learning is simply being together with people from very different backgrounds and very different upbringings than your own. So our students were desperate to come back. They were very, very eager to leave their homes and their basements and return and have exactly that social interaction. But of course, we're in a world in which social interaction poses unique difficulties. I'll give one example. Our athletic teams are back. They are not competing. I was paying attention to that Big Ten announcement. We're certainly not the Big Ten, but they are practicing. So teams are doing individual skill development. They're doing strength and conditioning. They're watching film. They're doing leadership training, but all of that in a socially distanced way. So they may be masked, they may be 6 to 10 feet apart, but they are together in small groups of 4 or 5. So for example, there might be drills that they can do without having physical contact and without using shared equipment. Hard to do that in some sports, but we're seeing that happen. And that means that they have a sense of being together, they can communicate, they can talk, they just have to remain as far away as is practical under the circumstances. We have about 100 clubs and organizations, and they have been developing over the summer their own kind of virtual plans, movie nights, Zoom meetings, et cetera. We have tents set up all over the campus. We're really, really hoping for good weather in the fall, and I'm sure that Bradley, it's the same. I'll be very interested to hear how you're doing with this, but I think we're finding ways to bring our students together. What we say is socially together, physically distanced.
Yeah. Well, we need to take a break in about 2 minutes, but President Standiford, I guess I'll start with the question we just asked or put to President Amott of Knox. What sort of things, I mean, obviously Bradley has announced it's implementing a 2-week campus-wide quarantine. It's reverting back to remote learning after COVID-19 clusters broke out on campus. Can you talk about, and I should say, you know, Bradley is ahead of where Knox is. Knox, as we just heard, classes are just resuming. Bradley has been back for a while. Why was that decision taken? What happened there that led to that?
Yeah, we were looking at a couple things when we made the decision to go into quarantine for 2 weeks. One of the things we were looking at is the number of positive cases. And we'd seen an uptick in number, but perhaps more importantly, we have a pretty aggressive contact tracing program. And we could tell from our contact tracing that those numbers were about to go up quite a bit more. So we took a proactive approach and decided it was time to go into a 2-week quarantine to try to get that a little bit under control. And of course, as we anticipated, we did see the numbers tick up as we went into the quarantine. But our hope and expectation is this week, these 2 weeks give us a chance to kind of reset our behaviors and get us back on the track where we can finish the semester successfully.
Well, what you mentioned, reset our behaviors, is there any indication of what caused those outbreaks on campus?
It is, and we've been very fortunate to have a very successful contact tracing effort. And it's interesting, I know at a number of schools, the big challenge has been these large gatherings, these super spreader events. What we were finding, and this is something we're all learning as we go through this, what we discovered is that it wasn't necessarily a particular big event, but a multitude of smaller events, 8 to 10 students who would get together. And then one of those students would then go to another event and undoubtedly, unknowingly, was positive and spread that mm-hmm. to another event. And these clusters, these small clusters were really at the heart. And so that,
okay,
that
so I'm gonna ask you to pause there and we'll come back and pick up on the small clusters. We need to take a quick break for our stations. You're listening to the 21st. More to come after a break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Bradley University President Stephen Standiford and Teresa Amott, who's the president of Knox College. Bradley's in Peoria. Knox is in Galesburg. Listeners, if you live in one of those towns, or even if you don't, maybe you're an alumni somewhere else, or you have know a student there, we want to invite you into our conversation. The phone lines are open, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. We have a Twitter question I'll be getting to in a few moments. But President Standiford, before the break, you were talking about not super spreader events, but some smaller clusters of cases that ultimately caused the outbreaks you were seeing on Bradley. And if you want to continue where I had to interrupt you, please do.
We can just kind of jump back in, but actually it's an interesting question. And it was a real interesting observation for us because again, a lot of the campuses have seen these large events that have been the epicenters. And for us, it was the smaller gatherings. And President Amott described it nicely. Our students want to connect. We want them to connect, right? I mean, that's a big part of the experiences of our respective universities. So what we're trying to talk about now is this idea of socially connected, but physically distant. And that's tricky. We're looking at different ways of doing that, virtual trivia nights, virtual 5Ks, virtual coffee hours, and the like. But that's really where we saw a lot of the challenges is with these small group gatherings.
You know, the virtual question, though, it raises an interesting point because I think I've said this a couple of times on the show now, so listeners, forgive me. But, you know, Saturday Night Live had a very incisive comment in a skit they did in one of the remote shows when we had already sort of gone into distancing. You know, congratulations to the class of 2020. You'll be all paying for, you know, sort of elite university experiences with a University of Phoenix online, you know, feel to it. And I wonder, you know, how much of this, you know, you can't really replace the student experience with virtual settings, right? How do you justify, you know, continuing to ask students to foot the bill for private school tuition when they are not getting the in-person experience they're that they would be hoping for?
So I'm happy to comment just a little bit on that. And one of the things that we talk about here at Bradley is that we're committed to a high level of student engagement, regardless of format. And that's something that our faculty have been very thoughtful about. It's obviously a different experience to be online, but it can still be very engaged. And one of the big differences is, I mean, there's a difference between 200 students logging in to watch a video versus a fairly intense online conversation with a class of 12 students. So how you think about engaging online is different than obviously face-to-face, but you can still have that high level of student engagement. In fact, we're big on this idea of experiential education, getting students connected to people in their chosen field of study. I actually was a guest speaker in a strategy class earlier this week, And even though it was online, it was a very engaged conversation. And you can do that if you're thoughtful about how you create those online environments. So just because it's online doesn't mean it can't be very engaging. And that, I think that's really the difference on how you think about online and not whether or not online versus face-to-face are the only options.
And President Amata, yeah, I would like to ask you to weigh in on that. Yeah,
I would. And I think that the point is really the point of scale that we just heard, that our faculty have for decades developed classroom experiences that engage students very deeply and intimately and in challenging and rigorous ways. So a discussion group of four students or five students lasting for an hour and a half is going to go deeply into the kinds of questions that will test their brains and teach them at a much deeper level than might happen, for example, if you're being evaluated with multiple choice exams, whether those are in person or online. So I think the scale of a place like Bradley, a place like Knox, is what makes the difference. The fact that the faculty have been trained in engagement of students, in rigorous probing conversations with students, what that really means is that you are getting Knox faculty or Bradley faculty, you're getting courses that are being developed with that pedagogy, that core commitment to learning in mind. Now, we all, I think, assume that this is not forever, that we will sometime in the next 12 months or 6 months or 18 months segue more and more toward in-person classes as the environment becomes safer. And so when that happens, then we'll be able to expand the range of our experiential learning back to where it used to be. But even now, I would agree that with the Bradley view, which is we can do this differently because of our scale.
President Amat, how much of the decision to resume in-person classes is a financial imperative for private universities?
For us, I would have to say that the core is the mission. It's missional. That is, people come to teach at Knox because they are really committed to undergraduates. You know, undergraduate education is our business, our only business. And they come because they want to be with young people in that really important 4 years of the undergraduate experience. Knowing that our students were missing that experience. And by the way, we have, you know, almost a third of our students are first generation college students. Many of them are Pell eligible, low income students. This is so important for them to have this college experience now and to have deferred that experience already through the spring. We saw the impact on our students. We actually saw the mental health issues. We saw the families' deep sorrow that their students' progress towards a college degree, this remarkable credential, first in their generation, to see that progress interrupted. I have to say that, you know, I'm an economist, so of course I'm concerned about the financial viability of our institutions of higher education. But at the end of the day, the reason we are an institution of higher education is because we want to educate young people. And we really felt we needed to bring them back to make that happen.
And President Standiford, same question to you. We saw McMurray College in Jacksonville, another small private institution in Illinois, smaller than Bradley. But I mean, how much of the decision at Bradley was a financial imperative to resume in-person classes?
It's a great question. I think President Amat described it nicely, and I would just pick up on some of that. You know, it's interesting. There's been a lot of conversation throughout the nation around the decisions being made at universities based on financial issues. And I think that's a mischaracterization, probably in 99%+ of the cases. Our industry is passionate about the health and well-being of our students. And we know that the health and well-being of our students is in large part, in fact, one of our faculty has done a fair amount of research around the importance of social interaction for mental health of our students. We know that's an important piece, and that's something that really is driving much of our decision making. Like most universities, we have a virus response team. Obviously, our CFO is part of that group, but we made the decision very early on that finances were not going to drive our decision making. We'll make the finances work. It won't be pretty or easy on either path, by the way. It's very expensive to be open in a pandemic environment as well. So the myth that we're doing this strictly to balance the finances, I think, falls apart in front of the evidence of both the missions of universities and the recognition, or perhaps the lack of recognition, that being open has its own sort of expenses that many of us are experiencing in ways that we wouldn't have experienced otherwise. So it really is mission driven. I mean, that's what's really driving the decision making. What maximizes the health and well-being of the students, faculty, and staff?
You know, I want to talk now about student responsibility versus the university's responsibility to students and communities. We here at the 21st have been passing around an article from The Atlantic over the summer. I think it was in July. The headline was, "Colleges Are Getting Ready to Blame Their Students." This is came out before students went back to school, but it basically the thesis is that college students, mostly aged 18 to 22, they've been looking forward to this college experience for a very long time. Are they being put in a position to, you know, quote unquote, fail and then have the blame shifted to them if there are COVID-19 outbreaks? And what is the administration's responsibility in that? I guess, President Standiford, since you have seen some students who have, you know, I guess, one could argue, failed in their responsibilities to socially distance, to wear masks. How do you respond to that?
I love this question, by the way, because I've watched this conversation. I'm familiar with the article you're talking about with some fascination. And I want to be really clear, and I think this is something that we should all be recognize, is our students did not create this problem. This problem exists because of an incredibly infectious virus that we're all trying to figure out how to navigate through. So our students didn't create the problem. Now, what we are learning is their behaviors contribute to the spread of the virus. And the argument that we make at Bradley is it's our responsibility to help our students understand the type of behaviors that are necessary for us to be able to successfully navigate the current situation. And a big part of our quarantine is not about blaming our students, but it's about giving us an opportunity to better understand and reset our behaviors so that we can successfully come back for the rest of the semester. Not blaming our students, but our responsibility to help them understand the type of behaviors that are necessary for us to be successful.
President Nemat, I mentioned earlier we had a question on Twitter at 21st Show. This is somebody who goes by the name Michelle, said, if a student tests positive, how do you test him or her after quarantine and or recovery from COVID-19? How do you assure they are no longer contagious? How do you safely reintegrate them into the campus?
One of the things that every college president in the United States has had to do is have a crash course in public health and epidemiology. Fortunately, yes. We are not ultimately the people who are the epidemiologists, so I'm going to defer that and say that our testing regimen is we're using PCR tests, which are the gold standard right now. Should other tests, for example, the U of I test, become available, we would certainly supplement for our surveillance testing. But we're pretty confident that we are working with testing regimens that do not have a high rate of false negatives, et cetera. So, I mean, it's a public health question. I'd like to come back to this, are we blaming students? When I read that article as well, and, you know, it's much like this issue of we're just in it for the money. It's a little bit infuriating to read that kind of article. We are in the business of learning. We bring young people, 18-year-olds, to our campus every single year. And 4 years later, they have made mistakes. Every one of them has made a mistake. Heck, over 4 years, I've made a lot of mistakes. That's what we do. We learn, we teach. We learn, we teach. And year after year, they are still 18 when they arrive. But we use that opportunity to develop their wisdom, their judgment, their accountability, their responsibility, along with their skills and their knowledge of whether it's physics or whatever. So this is our business. It is not our business to blame them. It is our business to educate them. And that's what we do every single year. This year is no different.
Teresa Amott is the president of Knox College in Galesburg. We've also been speaking with Stephen Standiford, who's the president of Bradley University in Peoria. President Amott, President Standiford, thank you so much for joining us today on the 21st.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And President Amott, I do want it known, one of our producers, Anna Casey, is a proud Knox graduate, and she wants it known that she did not make any mistakes in her 4 years at Knox. So,
that's great.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. Before we go, I do want to make a pitch for joining our texting group. We've been hearing really interesting things from listeners. It does inform our coverage. You can join by texting the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Again, text the word TALK to 217-803-0730. We also have our voicemail back up and working, so if you want to leave us a message, you can do so at 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. We might play your comments on air. We would love to hear what you thought about what we talked about today or in any of our other recent shows. You can always send an email to talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. 21stshow.org is also where you can subscribe to our podcast, as well as anywhere else you get your podcasts. Our program is produced by Knox College graduate Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Eunice Alpasan's our engagement producer, and our intern is Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.